Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Crawford's Mill Mayor Todd Barton is our guest. Thanks for being with us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet us a question on our Twitter account, @WBAA News on Twitter. Hello, Mayor. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks for being with me on my first interview with you for Ask the Mayor. It's a pleasure.
Well, it'll go very well. I'm sure it will.
Okay, great. Let's start off. Crawfordsville has a big weekend ahead with the Lucas Oil Ironman motocross race. This is the fifth year for this event in Crawfordsville. Have you seen a growth in attendance over time?
You know, we have, and it was big from the start. And, you know, every year I think it gets refined a little bit more, and definitely the community's role in that event gets refined a little more each year. We've had the Finish Line Festival each year, and we continue to change that and refine that, and we're really looking forward to this year's festival. It will occur on Friday evening. And it's a chance for the community to really get involved in what's happening at the raceway, and if they're not, you know, familiar with the sport, to at least get some exposure to it. So it's a neat event.
Can you talk about some of the ways the community, you know, does become involved in the event, or how that's evolved over time?
Well, you know, I mean, certainly for the businesses, they have to prepare for this weekend. You know, there will be an influx of, you know, 25,000 people on Saturday. The races on Friday and Sunday are not as big, but they're still pretty big. You know, so we need to prepare for that. Traffic-wise, I think people are kind of in the groove and they understand how the traffic flows when this event is in town. But it's just a real chance to welcome, you know, those from around the world to our community, and everybody steps up to the plate and creates a very welcoming environment. So when you see the teams here, they're here already, and you see the haulers that come in, you know, they remind you of the NASCAR haulers, and you see those teams from those major sponsors in our local restaurants eating and interacting with the public here. It's a really neat thing. So there are many different roles for many different people. A lot of people work at the track on this coming weekend. So a lot of different things happen.
And what kind of financial benefit do you see local vendors reaping from an event like this, whether it is a restaurant or another establishment?
Yeah, you know, I said over the years that we're not really good at measuring that, and this is one event that we're going to really set out to try to measure and understand the financial impact. And I think it varies depending on the type of race. There are several races that occur at the track here, and they each have their own twist, if you will, or their own flavor. So it varies depending on that. But you know, this weekend you certainly will see the restaurants and the gas stations and those kinds of things very busy. You know, and it's just going to, you know, the weather is a factor also. You know, if people are coming in for the race and then leaving, or if they're sticking around and they're going to patronize some of the places here in the community afterwards, all of those things come into play. And I'm really hoping that by next year we'll have a good, firm grasp on what that number looks like. And we've done that for other events. We've not applied that formula to this one yet.
I do have one more question, Mayor. I did see that there's an amateur event on Sunday. So will we be seeing you on a bike participating on Sunday?
I've done a lot of things that are pretty far out there since I've been mayor, and that's not going to be one of them. I'll probably draw the line there. I'm afraid I might get hurt. So
I respect that.
You know, if you've been to the track there, it's an impressive, daunting facility. You're not talking about just riding a motorcycle around a dirt track, if you will. I mean, there are some monstrous hills and things. So I know what I'm maybe better at and what I'm not good at, and I have no experience on a dirt bike, so that's probably not a good place for me.
You know, I think that's the definition of wisdom as we grow older, is knowing what we're good at and what we're not good at, and stepping aside.
Exactly. I don't know that I want to try that.
That's totally fine. And another event happening coming up in Crawfordsville here in the next 24 to 48 hours, you have a countywide job fair happening tomorrow. I know that I saw that you talked about unfilled manufacturing jobs and the recent job cuts at Walmart Optical as kind of part of the impetus for this event. So why did you decide on a job fair specifically as the most effective way to connect employers and job applicants in your area?
Well, we assemble our largest employers on a monthly basis to talk about the workforce challenges that we have in our community. And I don't think we're really unique in that. I mean, I think every community's up against that problem right now. But we've set out to try to identify some real tangible solutions that we can apply in our community to at least help make a dent in the problem. And the problem is that if you look collectively at our employers, there are hundreds of job opportunities that are not filled. And a job fair is something we had been tossing around for a while. We had been discussing with the employers. And when the announcement from Walmart Optical came out, it just kind of made sense that now was probably the time to go ahead and move forward with that. So we worked through the process and set a date. And, you know, I'm not sure, you know, it's hard to judge if it's the most effective way to reach people. We think it's probably one tool in the toolkit. We've created an online presence to advertise job openings, and we're just trying to apply a mix. But what we're seeing with the job fair tomorrow is we already have 27 local companies signed up to be there. So 27 companies that have openings that are looking for employees will be there. And some of those, you know, they're there to help people through the process and help them understand, you know, how you get hired at our company. What are the things you need to be doing? And they're going to take some time to sit down with people and explain that. So 27 employers, I think, is pretty impressive. That's the largest we've ever seen when we've done this in the past. And it runs the gamut, everything from distribution to manufacturing, healthcare, and professional services.
Okay. And I know that, you know, you were just talking about people being there to kind of assist people with kind of on the other end with how to present themselves as applicants. I'm assuming that's something you're hearing from employers in your area, perhaps is in need for people to get a little more well-developed in those areas, maybe, you know, working on that resume, finding the way to shine in an interview, and then maybe improving some skill sets they can bring actually on the job.
Yeah, we will have that. That will be part of what's offered tomorrow at the fair. We will have professionals there to help people with their resume and help them understand the process and just kind of guide them. So that's a little bit of a unique piece that we've not had in this before, but we did think it was important to add at this time because we do, like you said, hear it from employers there's a gap there, and we need to help people. And we knew specifically looking at the Walmart Optical situation, many of those employees who are now in the job market had been longtime employees. So, you know, if they had been there for a number of years, it's natural that they don't have an up-to-date resume and they're not polished up on some of these things. And if they've been there for, you know, a decade, decade and a half, a lot's changed in the world since the last time they were in a job search. So we wanted to help them out, and we've added those components to this fair tomorrow.
Okay, you're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. This week, Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton is our guest. Thanks again for being with us. And remember, you can call in your questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999. You can email ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question to our Twitter account @WBAA News on Twitter. And last week, we discussed with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, Frankfort's local tracks application process to assist them with funding for an overpass. So I know that there's been a good deal of reporting from WBAA on your train situation. Where are you at in the process of putting together your local tracks application?
Well, we are in the process right now, and I think we're pretty close to being done with that. And, you know, we're going to have an announcement, I would say, in the next couple of weeks about our overall approach. We are certainly applying for local tracks. We're also taking some other steps to pursue some other funding. So it's moving along. We've been working on it very, very quietly, very diligently behind the scenes for months now, to make sure that we're doing everything we can to position ourselves to get some funding to address the blocked rail crossing situation in Crawfordsville once and for all. And that being said, you know, our situation's is really challenging on many different levels and very unique. The primary place that this happens is a state highway. It's not a city street. So that complicates things. It's kind of prohibited us from taking steps in the past. And I always tell everybody the thing to understand is that if and when we do get funded, this will not be an overnight solution. This is something that will play out over many years, and we will have to rethink and redesign, if you will, some areas of our community in response to make things fit and to make things flow and work well. But I think at the end of the day, most people in this community by far are ready to have this issue addressed and move forward.
So would you say you have a strong application, a strong case to make that you should receive this funding, maybe in comparison to other communities who might also be seeking similar funding? Do you think that you're...
I'm going to say that. ours is, it has to be better than their application, right? I think there are probably a lot, and I know there are a lot of communities in Indiana with similar problems. And I do think ours, though, does rise above what you see in some of those communities. I see communities talk a bit about the fact that, you know, they have the inconvenience of trains passing through and someone having to sit and waiting on a train to pass. And I always interrupt and say, look, you know, that's not our problem. We can live with that. You're inconvenienced for 10 minutes while a train passes. I'm talking, in our situation, anywhere from an hour to 4 hours to 5 hours. It's been as long as 6 hours or more that these crossings with state highways are blocked. So that's an entirely different scenario. And we've met with officials from CSX. I think the support that we have from them, they know they have a problem here. And the data, I think, will be a big, big factor in the state's decision-making process where to direct these funds. And I think the data is certainly in our favor. I know of applications that are, you know, of crossings that are, you know, in smaller communities or out in the country. Well, you know, the data, the traffic volume on those roadways is nothing like what we're talking about here with three state highways. So situated, but we'll see, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
So you say data. Can you give me an example of the kind of numbers, the kind of specific information that you're providing them with?
Sure. I mean, you have to look at the amount of traffic on that roadway in a 24-hour period and, you know, during peak times. And in this case, like I said, with three state highways and major city street all combined, it's significant. You also have to look at, I think they're analyzing the number of school bus crossings in an average day. And in this case, that number is very, very high. You're also looking at the rail traffic, and you have to get those numbers from the rail companies themselves. But how many trains a day travel through there? How long are they? How much hazardous material is being transported through there? All those kinds of things. So there's a lot of data that I'm sure they will use as part of their decision-making process. And you know, there may well be communities, you know, with a worse problem than ours, and if that's the case, they should go address those. But compared to the common issues that I hear, you know, we hear a lot right now, at least in our area, in the Indianapolis news market, about the communities just south of Indianapolis, and they're kind of new to having long trains come through their communities, and they're all upset, but they're not stopping, you know. So I think it's all a matter of perspective, and we'll just have to see how it washes out.
Yeah, and I would point out, I know that Charlotte Tuggle has addressed some of these issues in her stories over the summer, and I'm curious, she had brought a point up about how many, the train traffic coming through, as you put it, and I don't know if you have the answer to this. If a train comes through Crawfordsville and is stopping for X amount of time, are they counting that as one train that's coming through? If we're talking about, you know, because we're not allowing multiple trains to come through, right. Does it kind of diminish that train traffic number that you can indicate on an application. And that might be kind of in the weeds. I'm just curious if that applies.
I mean, they do count that as one train, and I think that's part of the data that we have to, you know, I think we have to highlight that, look, you can't just look on the surface and say, ask how many trains come through, because there's different, a train's not a train, you know? I mean, it's not a train. There's different types, and we have trains come through that are, you know, 10 cars, and those pass through very quickly. Amtrak comes through, and it's 5 to 10 cars that passes very quickly. But then we also have, you know, multiple times a day that these trains are anywhere from 2 to 3 miles long. And it is certainly a different scenario when they pass through versus when they, for mechanical reasons or whatever, they stop and they sit here for hours. You have to wait. I think you have to put some kind of weight on that and average that out. And that's data that you typically don't have access to. I mean, the rail line doesn't keep data that we blocked these 3 state highways for X number of minutes last month. They just do not keep that. That's where we have to step up to the plate and gather that data ourselves. And we do, and we're using that data. And the only way to gather that is through the camera, for example, that we've put on this particular crossing, that we can go back and look and say, without a doubt, this is how much it was blocked over the last, you know, any time period.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. We're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks for being with us. Again, call in your questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999, emailing ask@wbaa.org, or tweeting a question at WBAA News on Twitter. And Mayor, you just introduced the members of the Mayor's Youth Council, and it looks like the first meeting is in September. So what's on the agenda for that first meeting with the Youth Council?
Well, the first meeting, they'll need the opportunity to, get themselves organized, for one. They'll need to elect somebody to preside over the meetings, some things like that they need to do amongst themselves. And the first meeting is really going to be an organizational meeting, help them understand the process and what they will be doing. Obviously, we need to brush them up a little bit to make sure they're all at the same speed on the procedures of a meeting. So we'll spend some time on that in the first meeting. I don't anticipate in that first meeting that they'll have actual things to consider and vote on other than getting organized and understanding the process. And then from there on out, each meeting will have an educational component in which we'll have someone come in and talk about, you know, the different functions of local government and how governments, you know, agencies interact and local government interacts with the state and so on. There will always be that educational piece, and then they will also have the opportunity to vote on pending legislation that's before the city and the county. And I think that's a different twist that we've thrown in there. We don't always see that with youth councils, but I want them to be able to take the real issues of today, discuss those, debate those, and vote on them themselves. Obviously, their vote's non-binding, but then we want them to come back to the city or the county and report how the youth council voted and what kind of discussion took place and why they voted the way they did. And I think that's going to be very, very interesting. And then there's going to be some work for them to do. We've asked them to do some community service projects. Pike Place is almost done in downtown Crawfordsville, and we want them to think about some of the programming in that park. When we interviewed students, we heard over and over, there's nothing for us to do in the community, and we would immediately fire back with the question, well, what do you want to do? And we typically got a blank stare in response, but we're going to give them an opportunity. We're basically going to say, look, there's a brand new downtown park. What do you want programmed in that space? You tell us what to program in there. You design it and you promote it, and we're going to make it happen. So they'll have a lot on their plate.
Okay. And with the youth, an issue that's been discussed on several of this month's Ask the Mayor programs is school safety and how communities and school districts are coming at this from different angles. Some schools, for example, have elected to use the free handheld metal detectors the state is providing. Others have not. I was reading about the new SAFE policy program in Montgomery County that combines the resources of schools and the Sheriff's Department, the Crawfordsville Police Department, Montgomery County Probation Department to work together to identify at-risk children and families. And then the idea is to connect them with services that could help them. And I believe then it seems like the intent is then to mitigate future situations. What will that process look like, if you can speak to that?
Well, there's a process that I'm not directly involved in, and I think that's important to for me anyway, to know that the appropriate professionals are guiding that process, that they know that I'm there to support them, but I'm going to stay out of the way and leave it to the professionals. I'm very, very confident in the fact that when you consider the three school superintendents and the sheriff and the police chief and probation and everyone who's involved, the courts, that they are going to put together a really, really good process that is not, trying to single people out, but is really truly trying to get, intervene and really get help where it's needed. And, when I look across the gamut at, whether it's the opioid problem or school violence or a lot of the different things that are happening in our country and in our state, it always kind of comes back to the fact that we don't have good, viable treatment options for people as they start down these paths. And, you can see over and over in these school shooting situations where the writing had been on the wall with these people for a long time, and they had fallen through the cracks. So we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can here to prevent that from happening. And then the flip side is making sure that if something does go wrong, we are very well prepared. And I know our schools have been doing a lot to make sure they're prepared, and I'm extremely confident in the ability of our emergency response capability. We have some assets in place, some capabilities here that most communities don't have, with the mass casualty unit being here. We have, I think, one of the only, if not the only, truly integrated SWAT team that has paramedics in the team in the state of Indiana. Now, many communities have paramedics go with their SWAT team, but I mean actually inside the building with them that can provide immediate care. That's pretty unique. So we take it very seriously on every single level.
Okay, we have a listener question. I'm going to read this to you. John would like to know if Crawfordsville is seeing a change in the tourism industry with school starting so early. In Monticello, school has started at the end of July, and it interrupts summer plans, causing tourism to take a hit. So John wants to know if Crawfordsville has experienced the same thing.
Well, I don't have data in front of me to support whether it is or it isn't, but I can tell you that from what I'm observing, yes, it does have an effect. And I know from, some of the businesses located in this community, for example, businesses that operate canoe rentals on the creek and some of those kinds of things, once school starts, I mean, it's, even though the weather's still nice out, it's pretty much over except a little bit of activity on the weekends. But, we see that displayed very clearly with our public pool. And, it's pretty busy all summer. And as soon as school starts, we just close it anymore because there is basically, virtually no business from that point on. And part of it is, our lifeguards are back in school and people are obviously, students are in school in the daytime, but it's also that people change modes. They're going into that fall mode, and Saturdays, even it may be nice on Saturday, but they also have youth sports. They have all these things going on, and they just change direction. So I'm sure it has an effect, and we see that played out, and it's a tough call. I'm not in the business of deciding when school starts, but we certainly know when it does. That's for sure.
I have one last question, Mayor. Montgomery mm-hmm. County started using paper backups when it implemented new voting machines in 2016, so a paper trail if a system goes down. Right now, it feels like election and voting security is called into question almost constantly. And with elections coming up in just a few months, is Montgomery County a model for best practices for other Indiana counties as they're examining their own voting and election security?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm really equipped to answer that question. I don't have a good feel for what everyone else is doing, but you know, I did hear the clerk speak a week or two ago, and you know, the thing about it is, we do have a paper backup, but we also have a system that is, it's not online. So, you know, the possibility of somebody hacking into it is much different than those systems that are web-based. So during that actual voting, I think our system is very secure. And, you know, I'm not real clear on what others are and aren't doing, but we do watch here, you know, and I think everybody here is very keen to making sure that the system has integrity and that we make sure that there's no possibility of fraud or anything like that. And I see that across the board, whether your beliefs are whatever they are, wherever they fall in the political spectrum, I hear everyone collectively saying, let's make sure we protect the integrity of this system. So I'm confident we're doing as much as we can here in this community locally to do that.
And how can voters be, what is the best way, what do you think is the best way for voters to generally feel assured that due diligence is being done to protect the process?
Probably the most reassuring thing for me is to know that there is an election board that does oversee the process. So it doesn't come down to just one person and, you know, or maybe a small handful of people who might feel a certain way. That board by design is people from different political views and different takes, and they do come together and they do oversee the process and make sure it's fair. And I think that's reassuring for me anyway, to know that that is in place.
All right, we do have one more listener question. If Crawfordsville has any other plans for landmarks since the clock tower has returned, any other projects in the works along those lines?
Well, I think we're going to have to catch our breath a little bit after the clock tower. You know, that was monumental. Right now, we're finishing up the two downtown parks, which are part of Stellar, and we're also finishing up the Fusion 54 project. So a lot of really major projects ongoing right now that are getting close to being done. We also have some major roadway projects like Concord Road and things like that. So I think really getting through all of that, and then the next year give us a chance to kind of let the dust settle and see where we're at, and really listen to the community and kind of see what they're thinking or how they're feeling on these issues, and then kind of go from there. I have no doubt there will be more of that on the horizon. I think we kind of need to see what Crawfordsville or downtown Crawfordsville especially looks like post-Stellar and kind of get used to that and then go from there.
All right. That is our time for today. Mayor Barton, thanks so much for being with us. You can find this program at our website, that's wbaa.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions all week long at ask@wbaa.org or tweet us those questions at @WBAAnews on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening today, and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.